League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 381. Okay, so Colby and I watched something this past weekend. I'm gonna be honest, it annoyed the fuck out of me. So we watched that poop ship thing on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, about Carnival.
Have you watched it?
No, but I remember it happening.
Well, let me just say, these people on this ship have, like, clearly never been through a natural disaster. Because the stuff that they were complaining about, I would just, like, look at Colby and I'd be like, what? The whole thing that everyone kept hyper-fixating on was having to poop in red bags. And I'm like, yeah, we did that when I worked at the hospital during Katrina. It's not that big of a deal.
I mean, can you put it over the toilet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I was like, there ain't no way I'm going to be able to hold a bag back there and collect the poop.
Now, where it got disgusting was when the tugboats came and it started sloshing all that shit and it started, like, literally, it started spilling into the... Now, that's truly disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying anything about that. But every single thing was, like, the most... Is egregious the word? Egregious thing to them. I don't think that's the word, but we're going with it. And I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
That's basic, no power, natural disaster.
Well, I mean, I've never pooped in a red bag before, but...
But you wouldn't be like, oh my God!
No, again, if it could fit over the toilet and I could poop in the toilet, just have to, like, spin it around, tie it off,
yeah,
and do the thing, then that's fine. But, like, if they're saying, hey, you have to aim, like, a specimen, like, when you're peeing,
no.
I can't collect that stuff. I'm like, can I get a toilet hat? Because that's what I need. I want to collect in peace.
We're like, T-Rex arms, big belly.
Uh-huh. That's what I tell them, too. Because I'm like, I'm not doing it. Unless you want to hold that cup for me and help me aim, which Carrie has before.
They did go through trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not trying to minimize what they went through, but it was just like... The red bag. Like, if they said, like, drink every time they say red bag, you'd be as drunk as they were when they dumbasses opened the bar while the power was out.
Oh, God. That would make me so hot drinking.
It was literally, like, the precipice of disaster, you know?
Yeah.
When you're already in a disaster.
Now, me just, like, being on a cruise ship with, like, no power and stuff, that would have been enough.
Oh, that's miserable.
Yeah.
But, like, you can go outside. You can make it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God. No.
At least you got the breeze of the ocean. But then one time this person was like, we had to eat sandwiches.
Okay, now that.
I'm like, I thought they ran out of food.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. They had ships that brought them food.
Oh.
They just couldn't safely, like, transfer the passengers over to the other ship.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did all these people take all these videos? If the power was out, like, they did still have some of the emergency lights and, like, the intercom still worked. But I'm like, how did all these people take all of these videos on their phone and their phone not die? So, like, I think they had some semblance of power.
Well, they could have a power brick, like the solar power bricks. We have some.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I know that not everywhere has these types of natural disasters, but, like, I feel like most people have an earthquake, a tornado, a snowstorm, a something that knocks the power out for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
And you just got to figure it the fuck out. Just do it. Do I want to be without power? No.
Oh, absolutely not.
Would I be a cranky bitch? Yes. More so because I'd be a tired cranky bitch because I couldn't have my CPAP.
Meanwhile, Carrie does not like to go anywhere without a bidet.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In a natural disaster, you figure it the fuck out.
No, I know, but you would be complaining. Carrie'd be on the documentary being like, and I couldn't use my bidet.
That would be pretty miserable.
Oh, speaking of that cruise, though, Margarita, one of our listeners and members of the Creepinati, she was on that ship later.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't know that that was the thing. And I was like, damn.
They spent like $125 million redoing the ship.
Yeah. I mean, obviously. But, like, you know, just if I would have thought, been like, what? I would have been like, maybe not go on that one.
Would you still do a cruise if that happened?
Well, yeah, because they better give me a free fucking cruise. They better give me a few free fucking cruises.
I know. I feel like it's one of those things, like, disasters happen. I still would, you know?
Yeah, well, because it wasn't dangerous. It wasn't like...
Well, yes, it was. It was a fire.
True. But you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like in that...
They weren't sinking.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Speaking of a fire, there is an alarm that goes off in our building all the time. And it's like one of those just like the... Like, well, we're the only ones who can hear it. The people in the back where they're closer to it can't fucking hear it. It I don't know why, but like up front, you can hear it. And it's like, oh, who's going to go back there? And I was like, let me see where it is. Because sometimes I hear it before anyone else because it's just like one of those things. And then sometimes you just are like, oh, wait, it's been going on. Like you just forget because it does it multiple times a day. Girl, one person was going back there, so I said, I'm going to go back there with you and just see where it is. No, the fuck I'm not. Like they said, oh, Donna saw the trek that it is. To, like, because you literally have to go, like, all the way in the back, turn left, go through this building, do all the things. Which, I know, but it's like, this goes off at least, I'm going to say, 7 times a day. And, I mean, it's a longer thing, and it's like, And the people in the back who are closer to it don't fucking hear it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I said, never mind. I won't be going back there.
This is one of those things that Donna lists that's like extraordinarily devastating to her. And it's like the smallest. She's like, I had to stand up from my desk. I had to walk down the hall. And then I had to take a right. And then after I got back down there, I had to walk back to my desk, sit back down and take a big deep breath.
I mean, I did, but it was a trek. And you had to go through the warehouse, which is like empty and creepy. Just hit a button, beep, and it stops. And sometimes you have to stand there because it's just going to do it again. But you don't know until you get back to your desk.
I feel like that's something that like could be fixed.
Oh, they have people that come out and it'll be worse. Like we're like, oh, they're testing it. They're going to fix it. No, it just is worse. On the trek back there, the lady was telling me, yeah, the fire department used to come out all the time when this happened. And then they're like, oh, never mind.
That's a disaster.
I said, if there's actually a fire, we're all just going to be like, who's got it? Who's turning it off? Like, yeah, it's a whole thing. But y'all, I keep telling Carrie and Tiffany, like, I love working in an office because these perks that they've been used to for forever, I'm like, whoa, I love it. Now, my waist does not. Well, it does because it just keeps growing and growing and growing. But I'm like, no, girl, but it's hard to turn down delicious food. So I probably should be the one to go and do the trek back there and all the things to get in steps. But, you know, here I am.
I know my coworker, Megan, told me today, she's like, I think we're in a cookie war. because she brought me a cookie and then I brought her a cookie and then she brought me a cookie and then I brought her a cookie and she brought me one today. And I was like, yes.
Oh, God. Those are the kind of wars I want to be in.
I know. Well, before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about BetterHelp because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Real talk. Workplace stress, it is literally at an all-time high. Whether you're working from home, commuting, juggling too many roles, or just trying to keep up, it is a lot.
Now, I just said that I love working in an office, and I do, but it doesn't mean that it's not stressful because, hello, it's work. And then, you know, we joke about, oh, well, then we basically have two jobs, but it is. And sometimes you can get burnt out.
And it's not just us. 61% of the global workforce is reporting higher than normal stress levels right now. That's huge. And the worst part, most of us try to just push through it.
You know, we slap on a smile, chug a coffee or two, maybe slam back an energy drink, and then we're acting like we're fine. But when you do all that, it catches up to you. And so that's why this summer, we're all about taking small steps to manage stress and protect our peace.
And there's things that we can try to do, get our body moving, stuff like that, release the endorphins, all the things.
Better sleep.
Exactly. But the biggest game changer, therapy. Therapy gives you tools to actually cope and not just survive the week. It's where you can learn to set boundaries, manage anxiety, and figure out what actually makes you feel balanced.
BetterHelp is amazing because it makes therapy doable, even with a slammed, packed schedule. You can join a session right from your phone or your laptop, and they have over 30,000 therapists to choose from.
But here's the thing, too, is that you're like, I'm already stressed at work, and you want me to take off work when I'm already not making my deadlines and all of that to do therapy? Well, yeah, because with BetterHelp, you don't have to leave the office. You don't have to take time off. You don't have to leave your desk or your work or wherever you work, and you don't have to get in your car, go to an office, sit there, wait your turn, then be seen, then to drive back to said work, clock back in and all the things, and then try to play catch up. With BetterHelp, it's all online.
And they've already helped over 5 million people, and they've got a 4.9 out of 5 rating on the App Store from 1.7 million reviews.
That says a lot. And if you don't like quite fit with your therapist right off the bat, that's fine. No big deal. You can switch at any time with no awkward convo required.
So if stress is weighing you down at work, at home, or just in general, this is your sign to talk it out.
Y'all can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/APC.
That's betterhelp, HELP.com/APC.
And trust us, there's nothing weak about taking care of your mental health. That's the strongest move you can make.
Thank you, BetterHelp, for sponsoring this episode. Since it's summer, people are traveling, you know, making all the plans. You usually need somewhere to stay, so I decided to do the Wayside Inn. Even though I said summer, I am picturing all the autumn vibes, you know, pumpkin spice latte, Evermore. If you're a Taylor Swift fan, you would have that playing. It's just one of those, like, Hallmark movie moments where it's a quaint town and it's got all of the colonial times in it, like the architecture, like that's when the architecture was so like stately and everything. So it just seems like all this history is wrapped up there, which hello, it is. Carrie can attest to that just being in Salem and stuff and always being like, there's so much history, even in like a random cemetery. There's so much history. They're like, seeing an old headstone and you're like, holy fuck, it's from, you know, like 3 digits, not really, but you know what I mean? It's like, holy shit. But anyway, you might have passed through Sudbury and y'all just, I hope I said that right. But look, I focused really hard to say Massachusetts and not Massachusetts. Okay. I've come a ways.
I almost said not to be confused with Sudbury. And I was like, she's probably right.
Yeah, no, it is Sudbury or, yeah. Anyway, the GPS would say it right. So just like type it in, point it to it. You know?
It definitely would not because I know someone that lives off of Dido Road, and the GPS definitely pronounced it Dead Duck Road.
Oh my gosh.
Now, this was when the GPS was literally on a laptop, so it might be better now.
Well, and Dido Road is spelled like the Cajun way. If you were just to look at it and you didn't know, you would be like, what is that? Like, I mean, I wouldn't have said dead duck, but...
Yeah, dead duck's not even close.
Yeah, but I would have been like, what? Okay, but back to Sudbury and the Wayside Inn. And like I said, it was built in the colonial times, so it has that white clapboard, wood beams, stone fireplaces. It just looks old, and it reminds me of the season on Outlander where they come to America and stuff. And so you would see these kind of houses like later on and everything. So I'm just like, it makes me want to have a good romance. And there is some romance in this story, but it doesn't have a happy ending. Now, Sudbury itself was settled in the early 1600s and officially incorporated in 1639. Now, the town was one of those Puritan settlements that sprang up in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. So it had a lot of, you know, God-fearing families who valued church, hard work, community, and they were great at small town gossip. Now, in 1716, there is a man named David Howe with an E, and he opened what was originally known as Howe's Tavern. And he positioned this right along Old Boston Post Road, which was a major thoroughfare for travelers, for revolutionaries, and it was the perfect pit stop when you had to make that long commute from Boston to New York. It offered a warm bed, great food, a strong drink, and a place that you could, you know, not be riding your horse. Because I do not know how people rode horses back then so much. Like, I mean, trying to ride on top sometimes, I'm just like, ooh, my legs. Tell me I'm wrong.
It's not the same.
But I would still be like, whew. It's still, you have to hold on tight. Mm-mm. Have you ever rode a horse?
No. They're terrified.
Then you don't even know. I don't, I've only rode a pony.
Well, I mean, yeah, like that, but I'm talking about like...
No, I know, but I literally had no control over it. I just rode it, and someone was pulling it with the thing like in a corral.
Yeah.
There is a picture of me, and I wish I could find it, but Lil Donna probably threw it away because I hated it, because it was the time that I had almost broke my wrist, but I just like badly sprained it and stuff, so I had that... You know what I did, Carrie?
That's the most dramatic... I almost broke my wrist, but I didn't. So you didn't.
I didn't, but it was close. Anywho's it.
So not even like a hairline fracture. You're just saying it was.
Well, honestly, I don't know because, you know, my mom did get the strap from like Walgreens, but whatever Walgreens was in the 80s, because it was one of those. You ended up having to have one. It like kept your wrist straight, like the brace or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I had that, and I had, like, a short hair, and so, like, I kind of had wavy bangs, not, like, curly bangs like Carrie, but my hair was kind of wavy, and I was, you know, pudgy, and this was at, oh, you might have actually fucking been there, because my pawpaw stayed where your pawpaw was. I don't know if it was at the same time, though, at that nursing home in Hattiesburg, and they had this, like, little family get-together thing. There, and that's where we did this. And I was like, I don't want to ride the pony. And my mom was like, ride it. And you get like a Polaroid picture of you taking it. But like, I had my stupid brace on that I hated, had that stupid haircut that I hated. And I had some applique on my fucking shirt that I probably was very proud of. But, and jean shorts, it's a thing. I see it perfectly in my mind and oh, good. Anyway.
And now we do too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The longest story known to man.
You know what? Carrie's a hater. You wouldn't have had to have that story if you would have just agreed that people riding on horses, it would tire them out. Their legs needed to just be able to be kicked up in a bed and all the things. But you had to be like, it's not the same, Donna. So anyway.
I didn't say it wasn't hard. I just said it wasn't the same.
Oh my God.
I'm very argumentative today.
Today?
but like especially today.
Okay. So let's go back to this. The Howe family operated this tavern for generations, and during its long life, it managed to attract more than just those tired travelers. It drew poets, patriots, presidents, and if the stories are to be believed, there's quite a few spirits there as well. Now, one of those poets kind of changed the trajectory of this inn, because before, like, it was a tavern. It went through some different names too, but it became the Wayside Inn after Henry Wadsworth Longfellow stayed there. And he's one of America's most iconic literary peeps. So he visited the inn in 1862. And again, he was just instantly enchanted, like Taylor Swift, by the cozy, timeless atmosphere that it provided. Now, he didn't stay there for a long time, but it was enough that it imprinted on him. And this visit inspired his famous work, Tales of a Wayside Inn. And it was a collection of poems told by, like, fictional guests of the inn. Now, something I didn't know, well, a lot of things I didn't know about his long-ass name, but Longfellow, he had some tragedy in his life. So, Carrie, if you probably can't picture him, but he's one of those who had, like, the long white beards. Like, just picture old poet, and you just think, like, he looks like Merlin almost, okay? Like, the beard.
Why do you think I can't picture him? Well, Carrie, picture. Well, you probably can't picture this, you dodo bird. What the hell?
Well, you don't love poetry and stuff.
I didn't know you were a fucking poetry savant over here.
Now, you know I like poetry.
You don't anymore.
I did. And he was a long time ago.
Now, Carrie, you're probably too stupid to picture this guy because you're not as...
cultured.
Yes, you uncultured swine.
God, she is argumentative. Like, fuck, I'm just saying, let me draw you more of a picture for this fucking person.
Now, Carrie, you probably can't picture him.
Now, Carrie, if you don't know who I'm talking about, which you probably do because you're very educated.
Yes, I do, actually.
Oh, okay.
Longfellow John.
Oh, God. Jingleheimer Schmidt.
That's the second time that song's come up today. Oh my God. I have been singing that song all day long.
Oh, God. I saw on TikTok, it's this guy who does skits, and it was like, he does prompts that people leave, and it said, can you be John Jingleheimer Schmidt, but finding out everyone's name is that too? And so he sits down and he's like, oh, my name's John Jingleheimer Schmidt. And the guy, like him as the other person's like, oh, that's my name too. And like all the things, I don't know. He just acts it out. Y'all know, whatever. Carrie's made me hate myself today.
Mission accomplished.
Anyway, back to the story. God. So Longfellow, he lost his wife, Fanny, in 1865. Now, she was sealing a lock of their daughter's hair with hot wax. I don't know why. I don't know what they were doing, but she had some hot wax.
Like a scrapbook, maybe?
I mean, maybe. I mean, you should know, since you know the history of fucking Wadsworth Longfellow over here, because you are so cultured. But her dress caught fire from the hot wax. Now, Henry tried to put out the flames, like, trying to use everything. Even himself, he, like, flung onto her, like, stop, drop, rolled all the things to save her. But she was so badly burned that she succumbed to her injuries a little bit later, like, a few days later. And the burns he sustained left his face permanently scarred, which is why he grew that famous beard to hide those scars.
Poor guy. God, both of them. What an awful way to go.
Right? Like, in front of his eyes, his spouse burned to death. And, like, the whole sealing of the hair, like, I just feel like that's, like, such a moment, like, a tender moment. I don't know why. Like, I don't know. I don't know what she was fucking doing. Who knows? But it's like, oh, a moment that we have, and then tragedy. And then he's, like, just left with this permanent reminder of that horrific time in his life. I don't know. Anyway, so he poured himself into those poems, and they say that kind of lends itself to the comfort of this place, but also like all of that emotion and turmoil kind of can leave an imprint, which we know that. But because of that, him being so famous, him doing the Wayside Inn, and them knowing that this was this tavern, Henry Ford, like, you know, the bajillionaire that started Ford Motor Company, heard about this place when it went up for sale in 1923. And he looked at it, he was like, oh, this is a piece of history that we have to preserve. And he wanted to not just preserve it, but kind of make it a living history museum. So he turned it into like a whole little area. So the inn, but then he brought like an old red schoolhouse, like the one room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
And a chapel and different things like that, that made it into that wholesome, like colonial kind of vibe. But something about the schoolhouse, rumor is that there is a girl named Mary who went to the school, right?
Is she quite contrary?
No.
And wrong. You say, I don't like poetry.
Oh, God. But you're on the right track. She found this lamb and she nursed it back to health. And this lamb would just like follow her wherever she would go.
Is this Mary had a little lamb?
Yes, that is what people say is the, like, she went there, she did this, and someone had, like, wrote, like, just a few of those lines, and that's the start of this. But now other people say, like, no, it was so-and-so. I don't know, but that's the rumor, and if you're in Sudbury, that's what you're going to be like, mm-hmm, Mary had a little lamb, fleece was white as snow.
Man, that damn thing everywhere that Mary went.
The lamb was sure to go.
Needy little booger.
Now, if you're a Sister Act fan, you know I was given those vibes. Now, the Wayside Inn changed its name to Longfellow's Wayside Inn after it was kind of like that was a namesake. And again, people like from all walks of life have stayed at this inn. Really, presidents and royalty and all the important peeps you could think about, they've stayed here. But everyone just kind of calls it the Wayside Inn, not Longfellow's Wayside Inn. Even though it has passed through a lot of hands with the ownership, the Howe family, you know, had generations. And no story has left more of a lasting impression on the inn than the one of Jerusha Howe. Now, she became the inn's most famous ghost. But before that, she was a real woman. And she was born in 1797. She was the sister of Lyman Howe, who took over the operations of the inn in the early 1800s. Now, Jerusha never married, which in the early 19th century was not just uncommon. Like, people were very suspicious and judgmental and all the things. But before you think, oh, she's just like an old spinster, She wasn't me. She was refined, educated, artistic, very cultured, much like Carrie, who's very intelligent and knows all the poetry. But she really was this. And she was known as the Belle of Sudbury. And her brother Lyman was known as the Squire of Sudbury. And if you have watched any old like period pieces, you know that the women who were fancy played the pianoforte.
Yeah, I watched Bridgerton.
Uh-huh, exactly. Well, so did Jerusha. And
she watched Bridgerton. Yeah.
She played the pianoforte. She played the pianoforte. She spoke fluent French. She wrote poetry. She hosted musical evenings because she had the first piano in Sudbury. I feel like people were like, what the fuck is that? And she's like, come on over. Come on over, baby. And then she played the pianoforte and they were like, holy fuck, this girl is a class act.
All the while secretly still judging her that she wasn't married.
Exactly. But that's where the legend begins. Because story has it, Jerusha fell in love with a young British gentleman. They say like he worked on the ship, came in. So he was a sailorman. Don't know why I say it like that. Anyway, but some people said he was just a guest passing through. But they had one of those like storybook romances that he swept her off her feet. And it was just like, yeah, she's been single and she said no to these people, but she's found the man who she was meant to be with. And like all of that waiting led to this moment. And they were the talk of the town. However, he had to leave, but he promised he would come back for her, marry her, and then take her away from the inn, and they would live their life happily ever after. But when he left, he never came back. There were no letters, but the mail wasn't super reliable, so she's like, well, maybe he got stuck, you know? There was no explanation, just ghosted, okay? And Jerusha was heartbroken. She never took another suitor. So she remained single all her life. She stayed at the inn until her death in 1842.
Do we think that he was really supposed to come back? Or do we think he got what he wanted and he left?
That's probably what happened. However, if he did, like, if he was a seaman, like, he could have fucking died on the way back somewhere. And, like, no one fucking knows, you know? So it's right. Like, that's where it's just like, oh, I'm so glad that we have, not that we know everything now, but like we do have more closure or ways to get closure. Like if you had a guy that was working offshore at a thing and it's like, I haven't heard back from him. Well, you could be like, he might have died in a terrible accident. We kind of look it up and say, hey, was there a terrible accident? Blah, 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 blah. They don't know about this. I just feel so bad for her because being ghosted is not fun. And then to think that everyone, like, it's like, just move on. Like, be with someone else, whatever. But she didn't want to be. And maybe she didn't want to be married. Maybe she just wanted to live her life. She was like the girl in Bridgerton. I can't think of her name, but she was friends with the girl. And she's like, I want to be, you know, she's basically a feminist. And maybe she was too. And so maybe she was like, oh, he didn't come back, but I've had my little fun. I get what it is. But now I can be my own person. I don't know. Now, you can stay in her old bedroom. It's room 9. And it remains the epicenter, using big words here, of all the paranormal activity at the inn. Now, guests who stay in that room have reported feeling like melancholy when they enter. And if Jerusha was heartbroken, you could definitely feel that she would have been in that room, like pining over, like looking out the fucking window, being like, it's so beautiful outside, but I wish my boo was with me. You know what I mean? And then people have smelled her perfume and it smells like lilacs or a floral powder. And all I know is that when I hear the word powder, I think of Carrie and Chris. Chris had this deodorant and it smells like baby powder. And I was like hugging him and I said, oh God, all I think about is Carrie when I smell that smell. Like, I don't like it.
You should be so lucky.
I know, right? But, you know, like when you're trying to snuggle up, it's like, God, now all I can think about is Carrie. And we both know that she wouldn't let me love up all on her. She only lets Colby.
Well, just close your eyes and pretend.
So people have heard phantom piano music in that room and the one next to it, which was like her sitting room and like sewing room and stuff. Because again, she was cultured. She was doing all the things. There was an investigator who stayed there one night and he had brought a recorder. Now he was sound asleep, which I could not do because you wouldn't have heard anything on that recorder besides me snoring. But he was a sound sleeper and the tape recorder was playing and it caught piano playing and he woke up to the sound of that piano playing. It was faint, but he heard it and he couldn't name the tune basically, but he like jumped up because he was like, okay, is someone playing a piano? Is like trying to get to the bottom of it. And when he went outside the door going down the stairs, he couldn't hear it at all. And so he was like playing hot and cold, like, okay, I hear it better now, hear it better now. And it was coming from in the room. Like the call was coming from inside the house. So his dick was hard because he's like, oh, fuck, I am getting this on the recorder. And then he took that tape and like ran it through a software program so he could see the sound waves. And when he saw the sound waves, he knew that she liked a few, like, I feel like if you play the pianoforte, you got like, I don't know, like a handful of songs that you just like know by heart. You are doing it all and doing all the things. You have a few favorites. And he like did the sound waves, did all the things. He looked at the sound waves, identified the notes, and he has way more of an eye for things than I do because he found that the song he was hearing was the Battle of Prague, which was one of the songs she was most known to play at the evening events that she would host at the inn.
Did he know that before? Because I feel like he probably did. And he's like, oh, look, it's the Battle of Prague.
He probably did because he probably had like five songs that he was like, oh, these are hers. But if it matches up.
Yeah.
Anyway, now another investigator caught something on film too, because he was asleep, but he had the video recorder running. And around 3 or 3:30 in the morning, you see a black mist come up from the floor to the right of the bed and then kind of arc over the bed over him and then go into the wall behind the bed. And it happened again a few minutes later. And when the team saw like what was going on, they're like, well, that could be a lot of things. So let's go test it out because it could be headlights. It could be anything kind of causing that reflection. But they tried turning their cars on and off with the headlights. They would move the curtains, trying to replicate this, but they couldn't. People have heard footsteps pacing back and forth when no one's in the hallway. There's been a woman's voice humming in the dark. Phantom whispers. People have felt the bed shift as someone's like sat down beside them. And I wonder if ghosts have to really think about that when they sit down beside someone. Because I can't just plop down. Because, you know, you'd be shaking the whole bed. If I plop down, it's like, you know what I mean?
I don't think they care.
The listeners are
both. The ghosts and the listeners.
Oh, God. Because, you know, like if you get up early and you're trying to get back in bed but not wake someone up, you're like trying to ease back in bed. Anywho's it. But that's not all. Like there's some tragic romance here. And all of that has left Jerusha just wanting to find her love, her long-lost love, right? And so she tries to find it with the men who stay the night at the hotel.
Get it, girl.
Mm-hmm. But you should have consent before touching anyone, just so you know. But let's just act like ghosts have different rules, okay? One man claimed that when he was staying there, he felt a soft hand brush his cheek. And another one said that he woke up to a woman standing at the foot of his bed and she just looked sad. Others get more attention. So I guess she just has a certain type. You know what I mean? AKA living, breathing, human, men.
Me too. Your type.
Yep. Me too. Marvin Cohen, who's a bartender at the Wayside Inn, he said that he has heard lots of stories. One man said that he thought his wife was giving him a back rub and he's like getting all into it and stuff. And then she came out of the bathroom and he was like, oh shit, then who was that? And people think she might be a succubus because she has been known to fill up the men's legs. I don't think anyone had a happy ending from her, but who knows? And with stuff like this, it's no surprise that the inn caught the attention of the Ghost Adventurers team. And this was not just any episode. It was their Valentine's Day special.
Duh. Succubus.
Right? Now, Zach and his crew, this was early on. This was like season 5. So it was still
terrible.
You know what? But no, it was still like funny. Because he was trying to be funny, but he was also just awkward. But also thinking he was everything. And so it just made for great TV. And since it was a special, like, they did more things. And so one time Zach, like, got up and was like, everyone, because they were in a dining room, everyone, I hope you're having fun with your loved ones because I've come here to find my Valentine. Her name is Jerusha, and she's a ghost. Like, just silly stuff like that.
What a fucking idiot.
But I will say, he slipped on ice outside, and it looked like it fucking hurt. Like, it was a fucking fall. But they showed that in slow motion. They showed that, like, rewound, like, did it again. And I was cackling, like, my sides hurt. And I was like, if that was me, I would probably cry, be like, we're not recording anymore. Like, get the cameras out of here. But him doing it, hilarious.
People falling is honestly, I mean, obviously if they're okay, but people falling is one of my favorite things.
Yes. And Zach was like doing poetry because, oh, you God. Know, yeah. that's the whole thing. And he was just doing it to random women. He was like, let me try my pickup lines. And again, he's so awkward, but to me, he's like one of those hot nerds. So Zach is like doing pickup lines, doing this poetry, and he followed this woman kind of up the stairs, and he's like doing it off of his head. Like, this is not planned, because he's just like, and then the woman went up the stairs and the blah, 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 you know? And then this man comes down and he says, but a man, that was not the plan. And I fucking lost it again. Oh, it was a great episode, honestly. Like, if you just like classic ghost adventures, it's definitely one to watch. Like I said, season 5, their Valentine's Day special. So, of course, Zach was like, she's going to be so happy to be my Valentine, like all the things. I will say Carrie would have loved to be his Valentine because he had one of those cheap boxes of chocolate in the heart. And he had that, like, and he was like, lock me in with her. And I was like, Carrie would be like, lock me in with that heart. He invited her to make her presence known, you know. And of course, while he was laying there, like, no woman can say no to him. He felt a touch on his leg, and he said it started, like, making tingle on his leg. The team experienced, like, EMF spikes, sudden temperature drops, and they did hear faint piano music coming from a silent hallway. They captured voices because he would ask the questions, and when Zach asked if Jerusha was there, the spirit box answered yes. And then he was on the stairs and he was saying something, and it cut to like, we found this EVP while we were rewatching the audio, and she was definitely turned on by our physiques. And because
oh,
it said,
oh my God,
very strong or something like that. And I was like, okay, Zach.
Right.
Uh-huh. God. Anyway, it wasn't all like fun and games because they did feel an emotional weight in that room. And they said, like, you could just feel overcome with grief in that room. But I want to end with this. And Zach did take part in this thing that I'm about to tell you. So one of the innkeepers wanted it to be fun for kids, and so he would hide candy in odd places around the inn. It was like a little fucking Easter egg hunt, and you get candy at the inn? Hell yeah. Well, people thought it was fun, and they started to leave stuff to be like, hey, there's usually candy in the left rafter above the toilet kind of thing, and so if you found the note, you can go, oh, shit, let me go to there and look and see if there's candy. And with that, it became known as a secret drawer society because it would be tucked into old desk, old, like, dresser drawers, in the rafters, all the things. And no one really knows, like, how and when it became such a tradition, but it still lives on. And so when Zach and them were there, they had, like, a whole chest of letters left, and people, instead of having candy, would kind of like find a letter, and it would just be like, me and my wife had a wonderful night, you know, happy anniversary. And so people would then like leave another letter, and then it got to, oh shit, like I woke up to a woman staring at me and, you know, touching my leg. And so other people started to leave. It was, instead of a guest book, it's just like these hidden little gems. And some of these people have left basically erotic novels talking about what them and Jerusha did. And they were like, I'm not mad at it. I had fun. Like, okay, get it. What else? But if you go to Sudbury and you stay at the Wayside Inn, I want to know if you find a note, if you leave a note, if your man gets felt up, because it just seems like, even though there's a lot of activity, it seems to be centered around Jerusha.
But aren't you supposed to not mess with a succubus?
Well, yes. But they don't know if she is a succubus. On the episode, apparently it was a few like episodes back, Zach had mistakenly said incubus. Like, if you're an incubus, come get me. Like, touch me, incubus. Come here, incubus. Like, and they kept showing the clips or whatever. He said, you say it one time and you won't let me live it down. He's like, the succubus. I want the succubus.
I mean, you can have whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. You can have whatever you like. But that's all about Longfellow's Wayside Inn. And I hope if you are local there, you do go check it out. But just remember, not all the guests do check out.
Did you write that down?
I did. Dun, dun, dun.
I would definitely go to this one, though.
Yeah, because it's not a scary thing. You know, no one's saying, oh, I woke up and I felt hands around my neck choking me and, you know, like sleep paralysis kind of thing. It's more, she just wants to give you some back scratches at night and maybe a little tug and a pull.
Well, can she just play with my hair? I mean, I can.
You got the masculine energy. She might be like, oh, okay. Look at these lovely locks.
Who's she, Fabio? Well, before we get into my story, we have to talk about Beam's Dream Powder. Okay, look, some nights sleep just does not want to be your friend. You can do all the right things. Low light, no phone, read a little, and still your brain's like, cool, let's replay every awkward thing you've ever said and done since seventh grade.
You know, seventh grade was hard for you.
Very hard.
But seriously, sometimes you just are wide awake for no reason. It's bedtime, your body's freaking tired, but your brain's, again, let's start a new to-do list. Let's worry about tomorrow so much that you can't sleep. That was me last night.
Or you're like me, and you had to go to your CPAP doctor because, well, you had to, but also because you had to be like, I am not sleeping good because I am not getting a good seal. I keep waking up from a so maybe I need a little bit of help with Beam's Dream Powder.
Because your bed can be as comfy as possible, but sometimes you do need the help to drift off to those peaceful Z's. And y'all know I'm a fan of Beam's Dream Powder.
Dream's made with all natural ingredients like reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin. And this is like this soothing blend that helps you wind down, fall asleep, and stay asleep, but not wake up feeling groggy and hungover.
Right. It's just real restful sleep. And it doesn't just knock you out. It eases you into the sleep. And you know it's got to taste good because I'm not going to just do something that doesn't taste good.
I didn't get this figure from eating stuff and drinking stuff that don't taste good.
Exactly.
Look, it's like warm. It can be chocolatey. Depends on what flavor you get.
Caramel.
I know. There's some good ones. And you just can put it in milk or water and
that's a frother.
Yeah. You will really notice a difference. You're going to wake up refreshed. You're going to be less foggy. You're not going to be as draggy.
Which can also lead to having a terrible day the next morning. And work is already stressful. Life is already stressful. You need that restful night's sleep. And Beam has improved over 17.5 million nights of sleep. And we are just two of those nights. Or, you know, several hundred by now because I do be using it all the time.
So if sleep has been hit or miss for you or your brain's been doing laps while you're trying to get rest, Dream might be your new best friend.
The only exercise I want to do in the bed is the horizontal mambo.
So right now you can get up to 40% off their best-selling Dream Powder by going to shopbeam.com/creep and use the promo code creep at checkout.
Again, up to 40% off going to shopbeam.com/creep. That's BEAM and use code creep at checkout.
Because your best days start with your best sleep. Okay, so my story this week is a recommendation from Dory L. in the email. This one, we're going west to Amarillo, Texas.
Amarillo by morning.
But really, wouldn't it be Amarillo? Why do we say Amarillo?
Well, I don't know.
Because it's named like after the word yellow. I saw that and I don't remember where I saw it.
I was like, okay, cultured queen.
But that is basically, that is yellow. Okay, so we're talking about Brian Denneke. So Brian was born to his parents. Well, his dad went by Mike and his mom went by Betty. And he had a brother named Jason. Brian was born in March of 1978. So in 81, the family moved to Texas. So now Brian was known as being like very energetic, charismatic, just kind of like a natural leader. People called him Sunshine. But like when you picture someone that people call Sunshine, it ain't Brian.
Oh, okay. Because you know who I picture? The guy from Remember the Titans, because they called him Sunshine because he was from California. He was a new quarterback. Yeah,
no. So Brian
was a rain cloud?
No. He was great.
Oh, okay.
But he was really into the punk scene. And so he had like spiky, well, some stuff said green, some stuff said blue, but it seems like most stuff said green, but like really spiky green mohawk hair. Like the tall mohawk with like the shaved sides, like leather jacket, like exactly what you think of, like when you think of like kind of the leader of the punk scene in Amarillo. So it's just funny, like Sunshine is not exactly what you think of when you think of this like tatted up, pierced, leather jackety type guy, you know? Yeah. But I don't think it was like an oxymoron for him because I think he really was a gregarious, fun loving guy.
Oh my God. I just kind of mentioned that you might not know who the fucking Longfellow is, and now you're having to throw out all these god dang big words. Gregarious. That's egregious.
I'm surprised you didn't say asinine. That's your favorite.
You know, when you were trying to think of a word earlier, I don't know what you thought of, and I was going to say asinine.
Now, his parents were very like, look, we're going to just accept him the way he is because they didn't want to lose him. Because this story takes place in the early 90s. Well, early to middle to late 90s. So the 90s.
Oh, God. Okay. If anything could have been summed up just saying in the 90s, it was that. Beginning, middle, and end.
Oh, I have a podcast. But he was very different from his brother Jason, who was a little bit older than him. Jason was like very introverted. Like I said, Brian was very, you know,
extroverted.
Yes. Now, Brian did eventually drop out of high school and get his GED, but he found his place again with the kind of punk scene in the area. He worked for this place called the Dynamite Museum, and basically kind of like a local artist where they would put sayings on like fake street signs and put them places, you know, but it would look like a yellow caution street sign. And it would be like, I love you, mom. You know,
did you make that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it would be random. Like people would vote on stuff. They would just put
artistic. She's not. I love you, mom.
But part of why he dropped out of school, though, was because he did have trouble with bullies. Because, look, this story is straight from the book The Outsiders. Like, it could be
Pony Boy?
Yes. He's Pony Boy. And it could be, like, the Socias versus the Greasers.
Oh, shit.
This story was what people say is the jocks versus the punks. And that's what everybody, how they kind of distinguish these two groups. So the jocks were very mean to the punks, and the punks retaliated because they kind of felt like no matter what the jocks did, they were always the ones to blame because they lived in an area that was very conservative. I mean, again, it's the 90s. I don't even know how he was allowed to have colored hair in school because we weren't allowed. Hell, we had Tucker t-shirts in. You know,
Don't remind me of those horrible days.
But there was a lot of bullying going on. And that's when he was just like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done. But he did kind of put his money where his mouth was, because he was like making this 8th Street house. That was the name of it. Like a refuge for kids that needed help, like food, place to sleep, that kind of thing. I got a lot of this stuff from TexasMonthly.com. And then, of course, like the Austin Chronicle. There's this thing called Bomb City Foundation, because Bomb City is what Amarillo's known as. And then there was a People article. But, and then, duh, you know, Wikipedia. We are a true researcher here.
You know what? I want to put my money where my mouth is and get lip filler.
Did you really just compare that to somebody who's feeding kids and housing them?
Yeah, my Leo came out.
You can't use your sign to excuse bad behavior.
Such an Aries thing to say.
Brian did have a girlfriend, and they had kind of traveled a lot, like hitchhiking and living off the money that they made and all of that. But he was back in town in Amarillo. He had a band. So in that Texas Monthly article, they said that there was a quote from a teen that's like basically unnamed. And it says, teenagers here pay a lot of attention to what your parents do, where you live, what name brand clothing you wear, what church you go to, and what kind of car you drive.
I'm sorry. A teen was quoted as saying, teenagers here.
No, I fucked that up. Okay. A mom said that. A teenager said the next one.
I'm like, what teenager? A teen said, teenagers here. Like, nope, you can't make me believe that someone just said that.
No, the teen said, it's like we're stuck in the 50s here.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I pulled a carry on that one.
It's like we're stuck in the 50s, like the beginning, the middle, and the end of the 50s.
It's a very conservative area, and it just doesn't really match with the punk scene, and the people who were in the punk scene were viewed some kind of way. And like I said, Brian and the fellow Punky Brewsters were treated really shitty. I mean, I'm talking like on the daily. Stuff would be shouted at them, like bad slurs. People would throw stuff at them. And if they skateboarded a lot, so if they're like skating or walking somewhere, they would like try to run them off the road. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And again, there wasn't a lot that was done, because it's almost like that thing when you get in a fight with your sibling, and then because your sibling is being a dick, and so they've been a dick for like 15 minutes and you finally punch them, and then your mom sees you punch them, so you get in trouble and you're like, but they punched me first.
Right.
And it's like, but they only saw you kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm telling you a lot of the buildup of this very quickly, but know that these tensions built up for years. And there were fights here and there, but it finally came to a head in December 12th specifically, of 1997. So late 90s. So now IHOP was like the place to hang out. It was right at this Western Plaza shopping center. This is where everybody hung out. So there's this dude, Dustin Camp. Now, Dustin was in with kind of the rich, cool kids, but he had to work for it because, like, okay, picture like you drop something in a pool and you have like all those ring, 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 you know? And like the center of the ring is the richest people.
Okay.
And then
yeah.
The further you get out,
the ripples.
Yeah. The farthest ring, that's where Dustin lived. So, like, while he was technically still in that rich bubble, he was like on the further outskirts, and he actually only lived like a couple of blocks away from Brian.
Well, that's how it always is.
Exactly. You know? So Dustin was a football player. Even though he was a junior, he was on the JV team. So it was like he was in it, but he wasn't like in it. You know, like he was with the rich kids, but like he had to work hard to be with them. He was on the football team, but he was on the JV team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like he's always trying for more, always trying to be with them, but it's like not quite enough. Now, allegedly on December 6th, there was a kind of a fight that broke out at the IHOP. Dustin had like tried to run this kid over and like missed, but that was all alleged. So just keep that in mind. But on the December 12th night, everybody had been drinking, the jocks and the punks, and they all kind of somehow convened at this Western Plaza shopping center around 11 p.m. because there was supposed to be a fight.
This is giving me West Side Story.
Yes.
Like, are y'all about to fight or like have a like a rap battle going
on? That's what
I'm
saying. It's truly, yes, like West Side Story, The Outsiders, like it's like so fucking cliche, but it ends in murder.
Oh.
So there are people who are there for the fight. There are people who are there to watch. And it doesn't take long before the fight does break out between the jocks and the punks. Brian's there. He's pretty drunk, but I don't really know who's fighting with whom, but I know that a big fight breaks out and Dustin and a couple of friends run to Dustin's car. Now, see, this is the other thing, too. He had a Cadillac, but it was like a 15-year-old Cadillac. You know what I'm saying? It's like he was always trying to keep up with the Joneses, but he couldn't. And I'm like, my car's older, too. But, you know, it doesn't matter to me that mine's older, but it did. That kind of stuff mattered to him because he's trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
They run off to their car. It seems like they're just driving away, like just trying to get the fuck out of Dodge. When all of a sudden, Dustin turns around, like really quickly. Dustin starts speeding towards the fight. And he basically like jumps this median and runs over Brian.
Wait, he jumped over the median?
With his car and ran Brian over.
Like you were leaving. You know what I mean? Like you were going, what the fuck?
Right. And then after he runs Brian over, he literally says, I'm a ninja in my caddy. I bet he liked that one and sped away.
The fuck?
Yes.
A ninja in my caddy.
So Jason is there too. Jason is Brian's older brother. He sees what happened because everybody does. It's like somebody just got ran over. Like, holy fuck. People start scattering. You know, it's all hell's breaking loose.
Uh-huh.
And Jason runs over to Brian and is literally cradling Brian in his arms.
Oh my gosh.
Screaming for help. And Brian dies in his arms.
Oh my God. That's like the saddest cinematic moment. Yes. You know?
He basically had a crush injury to his chest that killed him. Now, like I said, they sped away. Now, in the car, there were two other people. The girl that was in the car, her name has changed in a couple of things I saw. And I don't know if it's because, well, it's probably because she was underage. Because at the time, Brian, when he died, was 19, but Dustin was 17.
So fucking young.
So I've seen her name as Elise. I've seen her name as Kendra. I don't know if one or either of them is actually correct.
Yeah.
But she does play a part as this goes on into the justice system. She's in the back seat, like, reeling from this. And I feel like the tone shifts pretty quickly because they just keep driving. And it's, like, really quiet. But yet, also, he just thought he was a goddamn cowboy being like, I'm a ninja in my caddy. You know, it's like, he was all into it, and then it was like, fuck, kind of what actually just happened. And then he tells them, y'all don't have to go down with me. I'll tell them you weren't in the car. And the guy friend that was in the front seat was like, okay. And she's like, no, bitch, we're in the car. Like, we can't hide this.
Well, especially because he screamed after he murdered someone, unless he had really dark windows and all right. The things, like, so people saw y'all leave.
Yes. And in the car, they're like, no, I don't think you realize like how serious this is. And she says that Dustin like lost it, started crying and like beating the steering wheel and all of that. But then also just like took him home. So he goes home and I don't know if he told his parents or not. Nothing said that he did except for Texas True Crime podcast I listened to said that he had told his parents and that they were like, just go to bed. We'll figure this out in the morning. But the kids that were in the car did go home and tell their parents. And so their parents took them to the police station and they told them what happened. And then because all this is like 11 o'clock, then they got to get home. They tell their parents, they go to the police station, yada, yada, yada. So basically, it seems like at daybreak the next day, they go to Dustin's house and they arrest him for murder. At first, he says he was alone. Police find that like they had been drinking too. There was some like alcohol in the car, and they find blood under his vehicle.
Oh my gosh.
And the poor girl that was in the vehicle, she talks about how she had like survivor's guilt. She didn't feel like she should have been alive because she felt so guilty. Like she just couldn't get that moment out of her mind because she kept being like, maybe he just hit the median. Maybe it was just the median, but it was like, no, he hit the median and then he hit Brian. Like he clearly hit him, you know, but she was just like, maybe that's not what I felt, but it was.
Yeah. Well, and then he said, I'm a ninja with my caddy.
Right. But here's the thing is that once he was arrested, people were split. People were very much like on Brian's side. But even then, more people, it seemed like, were on Dustin's side.
He ran someone over. They had been drinking. He didn't stop to say, oh, fuck, what happened? Mm-hmm. He didn't go to the police. He didn't call 911. He didn't do anything.
Right. Well, but it's also like almost being painted as like good versus evil, because it was Dustin who was this clean cut football player, God fearing, church going, you know.
Again, can I say he was drinking and driving?
Yes.
And was there with all the people who were fighting.
Right.
Allegedly had tried to run someone over the day before. Exactly. Or the week.
Exactly. Well, and then they pitted him against Brian, who was like up to no good. He was punk. He had colored hair. He had tattoos. He was, you know, all these things that didn't fit their mold of what they felt like a quote, good person should be and look like. So Dustin was charged with first degree murder, and this goes to trial, and he had an attorney, let me just tell you, because they tried to shift the blame onto Brian and just the punk community in general. They called them armed goons.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm. I mean, no, I'm not kidding you. They really did do that. There was this one time before Brian dropped out of school that he had been bullied so much that he, like, lost his bananas and, like, I think he threw a rock into an Arby's or something like that. And he got arrested for, like, a misdemeanor. And then right after that is when he dropped out of school because, like, he couldn't handle the bullying anymore. And so they brought that up to be like, look how violent he is. He's the aggressor. You know, yada, yada, yada. Like, Dustin was just defending himself.
In a car?
Right. And then they said, the defense said that all of the punks who were, like, testified on, like, against Dustin were lying because, like, look at these clean-cut guys. There's no way they could be the one. It's definitely these.
Lord.
And the punks who were there, like, cleaned up their look for the trial because they knew that it was going to create some bias. But they were all like, no. He hit him in a car. You know, he looked like he was leaving. He came back. But then the prosecution had the girl in the car. And they were like, you know, tell us what it was. And then the whole ninja and the caddy shit came out and all of that. So it goes to the jury. The jury deliberates for like 5 hours. And they find him guilty of voluntary manslaughter. He gets sentenced to 10 years probation.
Probation?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I mean, okay, 10 years is 10 years. Probation?
Not one fucking day in prison.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Now, one of the articles, I think this is in the People, said that a juror said that Dustin just seemed like a good kid. Like, that was the quote. And then another one said they were afraid, like, if he went to prison, he'd get hurt. But I saw in another thing that said that people were so pissed and up in arms about this whole case, like whether they were on Dustin's side or Brian's side or whatever, that they sealed the names of the jurors. So I don't know if those quotes are real. I don't know if the sealing of the jurors was the real deal. Unsure. But I mean, can you fucking believe that?
No. And I don't know how voluntary manslaughter only gets probation. I could, like, again, he should have got murder, one. But you didn't say involuntary manslaughter.
Right. Because the thing, too, is like they can't prove he was drinking because they didn't do like a, you know.
Yeah,
because
he didn't go to the cops after he hit someone.
But if somebody had been drinking and hit someone accidentally, they would be going to prison.
Yeah.
But they're like, he's 17 and he's got his whole life ahead of him and he's a good Christian white boy. Duh.
And Brian doesn't have a life anymore.
Right. No, I completely agree. And the prison sentence could have been like 2 to 20 years for this, but they gave him 10 years probation. Now, again, some people were pissed. Like it sparked some serious outrage here. And Brian's family did file a civil suit against them. It just said that it was settled. I didn't see an amount, but I mean, not that any amount of money is ever going to bring a kid back, but okay.
But it's the principle of that. Like, I would have done the same thing. Like, you're going to pay something.
Wasn't it the Taylor Swift of it all when she sued somebody for, it was literally like a nickel or a dollar or something. It's like, I don't want your fucking money. I want to prove the fucking point.
Yes.
But listen to this though. Dustin broke his probation. He and I guess his brother, I don't really know exactly what happened because it feels like some shit had to go down. But in 2001, he was arrested for underage drinking and like being a minor in possession, all of that. His brother was also arrested and his dad was arrested for making false statements to the police because he tried to cover it up.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so weird. Like, his dad basically got 60 days, but it was like 60 days of probation. But
yeah.
Anyway, it happened in 2001, and there was 8 years left on his sentence, and he had to go serve that.
Good.
Yeah, he ended up going to prison because...
But not for the reason he should have.
Right. Well, but that's the thing, too, is that, like, technically, I guess he only served 5 of it because he got out in 2006. And was paroled under supervision until it was done in 2009. But it's like, that just to me sums up who he is, that you couldn't not get in trouble for 10 years. Like, you couldn't just chill and not do a fucking thing.
Well, he got away with murder.
No, I know. So he's fucking invincible in his eyes until he wasn't. But something, I'm like, I could not find what happened because the brother got arrested too. The dad got, like, what the fuck were they doing?
I don't know.
But it didn't say anything about, like, driving or anything like that. But this actually became, a pretty big sensation. There was a movie in 2017 that came out called Bomb City, because that's Amarillo's nickname. And it was, like, about this whole thing. Now, it was very much from Brian's perspective, like, the family, all of that. Dustin and I think none of them are really involved. There was a 2020 on it. But there's been, like, a lot of songs because there's been a lot of concerts, like, dedicated to him trying to get skateboard parks, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, like, the punk subculture has really, like, embraced this and been like, no, this is fucking wrong and this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody was held accountable for this.
Right.
10 years of probation for murder? Could you imagine being that poor baby's parents that your child... is murdered and...
His brother held him while he died.
And nobody went to prison for it until he drank. Because of course he fucking did.
Uh-huh. And I want to just flip off all the people in the jury, besides people who were thinking the right way. But I want to
But they
like,
weren't.
No,
because,
I know. I mean... But you know what I mean? Like, I just want to flip them off and be like, see? See? Like, I know you can't prove that he was drinking and stuff, but it's like...
But here's my question.
Ugh.
If it had been reversed, if Brian had run over Dustin...
Oh, he would have got way... He would have got the 20 years
yes.
in prison.
Yes. Because it's how much money you have, it's who you know, it's what you look like, it's all of these things that just shouldn't... Can we do... Okay, can we set up the judicial system like The Voice?
Oh my God. That's actually a brilliant idea.
Thank you. I just came up with it.
Trademark that real quick.
Yeah. R with a circle, TM. Because truly, though, because think about even his friends had to diminish who they were in order to even get on the stand or even just sit in the fucking courtroom to support their friend who was fucking murdered, but just to support him so that they could try to get some semblance of justice, and it still didn't fucking work.
God.
Because they were portrayed as, well... punks that were criminals and did all these terrible things and deviant. Basically deserved it, yeah. You know?
I roll.
This one's pretty rough, like, in that it's just the injustice of it. It's,
yeah.
It's not rough in that there's, like, all these gory details of all the stuff that someone is being subjected to, but it's horrible because someone literally got away with murder, and the only reason why he had to serve a day in prison was because he drank underage.
Yeah.
Because you would get more time for a goddamn DUI than you would for this murder that he committed.
Yeah.
I mean, the fucking, our shit is just so fucked up that the stuff that people get away with because they have money or all of the things that I literally named a second ago.
Yeah. It's just sad that, you know, the saying, he's from the wrong side of the tracks, like, still tracks.
Yes.
Today.
But, and that's the fucking literal juxtaposition of their houses and their lives. And, but, like, I mean, they lived a couple of blocks from each other, but they lived worlds apart because one was trying to make it in this world and one was trying to make it in this world, and those worlds mm-hmm. hated each other. So somebody had to die?
Gosh. I think how you said this one was heavy because of the injustice and stuff. And, like, yeah, it didn't have the gory details, but it just shows that murder's fucking murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected this whole community.
And continues to, because stuff will be like 20 years later, you know, however many years later. And it's like, we're still talking about it, which is good because his memory deserves to live on. Yes. And his story deserves to be told so that we can be like, hey, why don't we actually stop treating people that look differently than us? Why don't we stop treating them shitty?
Right.
Why don't we stop treating people who believe something different than us? And that goes both sides. That goes whether you're more conservative and you don't like somebody with green hair, or that goes you're somebody who has green hair. And, you know, like, you have to, if they have to respect you, you have to respect them no matter what.
Yeah. Until they give you a reason not to, like an actual reason.
It's like, you have to get your beliefs out of my life, but I have to get my beliefs out of your life, too.
Live and let live.
Abso-fucking-lutely. That's going to be our motto for the whole rest of time.
Oh, okay.
I was in the summer, and I was like, well, that's stupid.
But after summer.
Every man for himself. Well, thanks for the recommendation. We hate them. The story, not the person that recommended it.
Okay, before we wrap this up, I don't know how I didn't even talk about this at the beginning, but Brian being the victim here, have you heard about the Brian Koberger case that you covered?
Yes. Took a fucking plea deal?
Yes. But then, like, there's more stuff that came out, and this is all alleged because it's on, like, a Dateline or 2020, but it's like he was only going for one girl, was like, oh shit, I think her name's Zanna, but like the other girl who was eating her food that she had gotten ordered at like 4 a.m, you know, like, totally get that. She heard something, went up, and then was like, oh fuck, and went back down. And that's when he got into her room and Ethan. And they said that he carved up Ethan's legs.
Oh my God.
They didn't like say what he carved or how, but they just said he like carved it up. And they said the people, like the responders, have not been able to get over like what they saw there. But then he sat in one of their chairs and like took a rest because, whew, killing people. Like, he was only prepared to kill one.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God. And they said that's why he left the other two roommates alive, because he was just so exhausted. So he's like, man, they haven't made a lot of noise. They haven't, like, done anything. So I'm just going to get out of here. No one's ever going to know, you know. But, like, he sat down in a fucking chair.
Look, the level of audacity. I mean, fucking P. Diddy basically got acquitted on everything. I mean, not really. He got found on, like, the two lesser charges. But it's a win for him. So I'm not surprised by anything with our dumbass judicial system anymore. Yeah.
But I was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe I didn't bring that up. But I'm so glad, not that Brian was your victim, but that the name was in there to be like, holy shit, like this just happened. And
here's the thing. If you don't have money, you're going to be guilty. Like that's just it. If you don't have the money to afford an attorney that's going to be able to do all of this, it's just, that's all she wrote. Like, Our system is designed for people with money, and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've ended on that bummer, don't forget to come see us in, well, I don't know, like a week in New Orleans, because that's coming up just around the River Bend. And don't forget the cruise, too, that's coming in November. So check out our socials if you want to get more information on that.
Don't think about Carrie and the poop cruise that she talked about, because this is not going to be the poop cruise, okay?
No, I'm going, so super excited about that. And it's a totally different cruise line. So make sure you check that out. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.